contrary to popular wishes, we are at OSCON and you aren't. Or if you are, you can come and buy us a beer if you like free beer. This is episode 12. 13. Episode 13 of the Tux Radar podcast.
Too much beer already. Two.
I am Paul Hudson.
I'm Andrew Gregory.
And I am Graham Morrison.
And in this podcast, things are completely in reverse. We're going to start with our challenge because we have an extra special challenge. Then we'll kick off with the news where interesting things are back from SCO while we see a new version of OpenSUSE. Our usual great features like Discovery of the Week, a special closed ballot to avoid flame wars, and a hot seat section. We are at OSCON. You can come and meet us, say hello. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Two Straws, TWO Straws. Graham, do you want to reveal yours or make that a challenge for readers, listeners, perhaps?
yeah, mine's at Dagville, but I never do anything.
Oh. Or, of course, we will post an update on at Tux Radar. Come and say hello. We like seeing people. Unless you're crazy, in which case, stay away.
Yeah.
Don't forget our awesome subscriptions deal to Linux format at tuxradar.com/subscribe. Just go there and see the massive wealth of Linux information you can have in your hands immediately if you subscribe.
It's awesome.
It is awesome.
I was filling in for Mike there. Subliminally.
It's unbelievably awesome.
Mike is still away.
It's a magical and revolutionary subscription offer. If you think our podcast notes aren't very good, you're holding them wrong. I guess.
Right, there's a good reason why we're going to start with the challenge for this episode, because the challenge, as posted on tuxradar.com by Mihaly, I'm sorry if I've pronounced it wrong.
I think it's Mihai.
Mihai.
If he's Hungarian.
Right, I have very little experience of Hungarian pronunciation. Anyway, Mihai had an absolutely fantastic idea. It's actually the best idea I've ever seen for one of our podcast challenges. His idea was to refrain from being at all negative about anything. Yes, anything during the podcast, which we, as soon as we read that, we thought, fantastic. We've been really waiting for the opportunity to be positive, and this is it. This is our chance, which is why we've started with the challenge. So just to clarify, for this episode of our podcast, we're going to be absolutely, utterly, and completely positive because everything is great.
Starting in 10 seconds.
Starting in 10
down
seconds.
With GIMP. Down with Python. I hate the GIMP. I hate Python.
Go.
Starting now. Yeah. Starting now.
Python's ace.
Yeah, this is obviously an awesome idea from Mihai. Thanks, Mihai. You're an awesome person.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Very good looking, too, for being so great.
He does say absolutely anything, which includes non-Linux stuff.
And so it's a beautiful day outside. I love the feel of the rain across my face.
Given that we can edit this freely afterwards, or readers can, Graham, what do you think about Microsoft?
Actually, I think, do you remember that Steve Jobs and Bill Gates interview where the interview starts with the presenter asking Steve, what good things do you think Microsoft's done? Steve said that, you know, Bill and Microsoft had really created the PC software industry. And I think Steve Jobs is right. You know, without Microsoft, we wouldn't have a PC software industry and we might not even have jobs. So I have to thank Microsoft wholeheartedly for that.
Thank you, Microsoft.
And for pushing me to Linux.
Our challenge from last time is confusing because this has been recorded slightly ahead of time, so we haven't uploaded them as yet, but we are in the process of the very, very process of uploading them right now.
The wheels of imagination grinding around.
Yes. I've already tried recording mine twice, but failed for technical reasons. But that was all.
No, can you say fail?
I almost succeeded for technical reasons.
You deferred your success.
Yes. It was an almost win, but sooner or later I'll crack it and mine will be done. Are you guys almost finished with yours?
No, I haven't got a clue, actually, Paul.
I'm on the verge of having awesome fun.
Okay, so expect to see...
Actually, that was negative of me, wasn't it? I'm really excited about doing it. I'm really enthused.
You look it.
Sorry.
By the time these awesome podcast notes go up, you will be able to see links to all our videos, either straight from Tux Radar or perhaps on YouTube if you're feeling particularly adventurous. And now it's time for the news, in which the first story is going to be particularly exciting given our You Dare Us. SCO. SCO have now come up with a list of lines proving that Linux copied code from Unix.
It's a bit late.
It's a bit late, yeah, I know, exactly.
Well, you know, they've been trying hard.
Yeah, they are. They've been working very hard. They're good people.
If it wasn't for SCO, I don't think we'd have such a strong and homogenous community, you know.
Yes. So with this lines of code, they've produced a PDF file actually drawing lines, connecting lines of code.
Like a flowchart or
KDiff. KDiff does that.
More like KDiff than a flowchart, I would say.
Are the lines color coded?
Well, they have lots of colors on them.
Yes,
but it gets a bit confusing because there are many lines because there are so many lines of code copied from Linux. They say, and obviously we agree with them because we're not going to disagree with them. That'd be negative. so many lines of code taken by the evil, good Linux people.
They must have done it by accident.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yes, must have copied and pasted by accident. So there are many arrows drawing lines, connecting stuff, and after a while you get confused trying to see what's connecting what. And you know, obviously those very very hard to write lines, such as hash include airno.h, were ripped off directly. Which is a real worry, I think, for the Linux community.
Well, it would be a worry if it wasn't all over and done and dusted, wouldn't it?
If SCO had any money left to sue.
Yeah. As it is, I think, well, how can I frame this in a positive light?
it's remarkably hard.
Is SCO even still alive?
In our hearts. Yes, this one's rather tricky to cover in a positive way. We are trying our best.
Yeah.
SCO have claimed that Linux was copying some rather obvious code.
Isn't it too... Weren't these lines posted ages ago, anyway?
They posted a handful of lines. Things like POSIX error numbers, which are generic. That's the point of them.
Would any court take them seriously? I mean, I can't... If we can't take them seriously, surely expert witnesses... This is the job of an expert witness to actually say... Actually, that line that you're pointing to there is used by almost every single C program in the world.
He's probably going, must be positive. Same problem we've got. He's trying to come up with ways to put it in a positive light.
They are doing a better job than us.
Well, it seems then with this challenge that we've chosen a good week to announce that OpenSUSE 11.3 is here.
Yeah.
What a great distro. What an important distro to the Linux movement. It's out.
Yes.
With many new features.
Well done, Novell.
And we love OpenSUSE.
Is it still the awesomest way to try KDE?
Quite possibly. it's KDE 4.4 in OpenSUSE, I think, which is nice. Because hopefully that'll be nice and stable.
KDE's finally usable.
Yeah,
it's the usable version of KDE 4. Yeah.
After many years struggling to bring usability to the desktop, the KDE team finally succeeded with KDE 4.4.
Congratulations, KDE team. Well done. Well done. That's what he's trying to say. Well done, lads. We're very proud of you. It's got Rose Garden.
Funny, is it actually part of the main... Is it installed by default?
Well, I think SUSE is still shipped as a DVD, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where you've got a selection of software.
SUSE is enormous.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, great. If it gets more people creating music, brilliant.
Yes, and updates to Firefox. Well.
Is that all the awesome in SUSE 11.3?
That's a lot of awesome.
Updates to Firefox.
What are you trying to say?
Rose Garden.
I'm not sure you're really pulling your weight in this challenge. That's an awful lot of awesome, quite frankly.
And they haven't dropped Mono, I would guess.
No, they haven't dropped Mono, because Mono's obviously awesome. I can say that and mean it too. And there's been one other major release, which is Opera 10.60, not 10.6, which is the first WebM browser.
Ooh, yeah.
That's stable. And it's out.
I tried it, actually.
Yes.
And the interesting thing is, I tried it mainly to see what the video quality was like.
It was great, wasn't it?
It was very good, and it's a good file size as well. I can't remember... when you install Opera 10.60, the help page actually has an embedded video in it that shows you all the new features and what WebM is all about. And it plays back very nicely, and I can't really see any difference between that and another decent video format, H.264. a lot better than the very good pervasive Flash... in terms of quality, but yeah, it's great. Opera have to be quick. It's good to have this kind of competition.
It's also very surprising, I think. I mean, Firefox had it in the nightly straight away. I was going to be negative then. But their constant drive for perfection means that we still haven't seen the latest version of Firefox released as yet with stable WebM support.
Yeah.
So very impressive work on your speed, Opera, gentlemen.
Also, kudos for having a really easy-to-understand website. If you've not tried Opera, go to the whatever. It's in the podcast notes, isn't it? The URL.
Opera.com.
Yeah.
It's not a hard one to remember, is it?
It is for me. I'm getting old.
Well, maybe it's not. I always get confused because that's like wine.com is about actual wine, not that rubbishy drinking stuff rather than emulators that aren't emulators. Whereas I think opera.com is actually Opera the web browser.
Well, it's really easy to try.
Anyway. There you go.
It's really easy to try, and you'll be surprised. You think a web browser is... If you think a web browser is a web browser is a web browser, try Opera out. It'll open your eyes.
It's got an embedded web server.
It's got cool stuff.
It's a very nice browser. It's great. It's easy to install as well.
There you go. Opera loving. And with that sugar-coated wave of positivity, we come to the halfway point of our podcast. Still to come, the discovery of the week, which will be fantastic. The closed ballot, do you think the likes of Red Hat, Nivelle and Canonical contribute enough back to the community? I think we know the answer to that, given our current challenge. And our hot seat here. This week it would be Mike, but Mike is away on special ops in Germany. Instead, it is someone else.
Guten Tag.
It is a Mike wannabe.
Mike's brother.
So.
Cool. So, yeah, now it's time for our discovery of the fortnight, which is my favourite section of the podcast. I mean, personally, I've been inundated with so many good things. I had real difficulty choosing one from my big list this morning.
But I believe you. I totally believe you, too.
How about you guys? How have you done?
Do
you
want I've said two things. One of which is great and obvious to most of the world, but not me. So therefore, it's still a discovery. And the other thing is rubbish. But at least it was 20 minutes ago, and now it's great.
So the first let's thing, see if we can work out which one's great and which one's rubbish.
So one thing is a command that everyone apparently knows, but not me. So I now know it. It is sudo space dash capital K. It just clears a sudo password cache. I hadn't known this.
Right.
So I was using my laptop to do sudo stuff, pass on to someone else. I don't want them to be able to do sudo blah, 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 and run commands because it saves your password for a period of time. Sudo space dash capital K clears the cache straight away. So any commands that you're sudo requires you to enter your password again. Hmm. Very simple.
That's
very
cool.
Very obvious. I just didn't know it. I was wondering how
to
do it.
No, I didn't know either.
There you go. It's quite an important thing when you think about it.
Interesting. I think I saw in the latest version of GNOME that you can clear privilege credentials from the toolbar once they've been entered in the same way. So once you've entered an admin password, you can do the same thing with the GUI.
I would never have thought that the shell would hold onto your password in a cache. So that's the whole point of passwords, that you have to enter them each time.
Sudo does, because otherwise it gets very annoying. Sudo blah, sudo blah, sudo blah, again and again and again. Have to enter your password every single time. It just stores it for a few minutes, basically. It doesn't store the password itself, it just stores a credential state at this timestamp you've been authorized.
Okay.
And checks that. The other thing, which is obviously incredibly awesome, is also obvious to the rest of the world, but confused the heck out of me temporarily, was micro USB. I've got an Android phone now, by the way, and it's very nice, very shiny, but it uses micro USB, which confused me utterly, because I had really thought the world had standardized on mini USB. I've got loads of mini USB cables in my house. I find my phone's flat. I'm trying to record my video at like 2 a.m. this morning for this podcast and couldn't because the phone was flat and I had no charge cables for it. So I'd left the charge cable at the office, stupidly. It's a micro USB and it looks like a slightly squashed mini USB. So I thought, I'm just probably carefully designed. If I push it hard enough, it'll go in. No, it's completely different. They haven't standardized at all. Any rumors of that are completely false. It's a bit of a shame because, I throw my cables away and buy new cables. However, I love, it's supporting the economy. buying new cables. Yeah. Supporting the economy is buying cables. So, obviously it's a great move to make everyone rebuy their cables. Thanks. Guys,
can I have a look at that?
No. Afterwards.
Fine.
It does save space. tiny little bit of space.
It is. It's what, 3 mils thinner? And apparently, the main feature is that you can plug it in and unplug it more times.
Oh, right.
Without it nadgering itself.
Cool. Well, thanks, Paul. Excellent discoveries, as usual.
Uber discoveries. There
you go. This section wouldn't be the same without you.
Yes.
Do you want to go next, Andrew? Or, you know, I'm really excited about mine.
Yeah, well, we can hold on to that excitement, keep it building up to a peak.
Okay.
As I desperately try and calm down the fever of joy with my discovery of G-parted. I know everyone's used it before, but I was just getting sick of deleting everything as soon as I downloaded it, because I ran out of space on my dual booting laptop. And I tried to run G-parted from within Ubuntu, but because it doesn't let you resize a file system that's in use.
Yeah.
So it's there, so I could resize the Windows half, which I never use anyway. I should just get rid of it. But I couldn't resize Ubuntu, so I had to use a live system.
Wow.
And you know what? I've read so many tutorials and just never used it. And some knowledge must have stuck in my head, because I could just use
the live CD.
Maybe it's just that it's really easy to do. Maybe it's really well designed and really simple. I think it is.
It's very good that you say that, because often people think that repartitioning and resizing things is a bit of a dark art.
Yeah.
But, you know, for you to go in and use it, and presumably you resized your partition and everything worked okay.
Mm. It's something that someone I know always picks up on whenever I fail in technology. It's like, you're able to repartition your hard drive, but you can't work out how to send a text message. You know, it's like the cornerstone of leetness. And yeah. It comes with a nice friendly GUI.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, excellent.
Well done.
Yeah, thanks. I feel elite.
You're an adventurer.
And kiss the guns.
It is a great tool. Right, well, are you ready for mine?
Go on. G-therion.
Nearly. Mine is Knitter 0.49. It produces a 3D model of a knitting pattern. It's very, very cool. It even supports KnitML, which is the XML specification for sharing knitting patterns. So, and it's actually very similar. It uses a very similar syntax to the knitting patterns you find published in lots of great magazines. So you could even just, if you don't have any wool or knitting needles handy, you could just type in the pattern into Knitter, and it will show you in OpenGL 3D spinny roundiness the pattern as it is, as you are knitting it virtually. It's brilliant.
It's awesome that there's so many specifications. There's one for knitting patterns.
Yeah, KnitML. It's great. having a quick look at it, there's lots of people who share KnitML patterns for socks and cardigans and pantaloons, all kinds of things, and caps.
Yeah, the thing about this is it opens up a whole wonderful world of geeks looking down their noses at other geeks. You say, wow, KnitML, ha ha ha. you're weird geeks, you. I know you didn't, but other people do. Other folks do. And it's really strange, because it is roughly the equivalent of World of Warcraft users looking down at The Sims users, basically. It's equal geekery. All geeks are welcome. We love knitting geeks.
Well, the first thing I looked at after discovering this was to see if someone had done an Arduino hack to actually make a knitting machine using KnitML. Because that would be awesome, because then you just give it the wool, give it the KnitML specification that you've designed in Knitter.
Yeah.
You know, and the way you go. Fortune away.
We love knitting geeks.
We should also give a shout out to the girls upstairs, because they produce a fine knitting magazine.
Yeah. I wonder if they use KnitML.
Produce more than one, don't we?
I don't know. They all blend into one.
Knitting magazines. And cross-stitching magazines.
Cross-stitching, all sorts of crafty. There's K-Stitch, isn't there, as well?
Is there?
Yeah.
Is that like for...
It's the same thing, but for cross-stitching.
Ah.
I don't know if they've got an XML standard.
Yeah, and it is cool. You do see it, the weave, in 3D.
You do, yeah.
That's awesome.
You mean they could have called it cross-stitch and didn't?
Yeah. That's probably taken.
Yeah, that's true. And now it's time for our closed ballot. But first, I'd just like to put out a correction. Someone wrote in saying that last podcast we made the erroneous claim that Osmos was in the Humble Indie Bundle, which is simply not true, sadly. It's a great Linux game released at the same time as the Humble Indie Bundle, but not part of the Humble Indie Bundle. Obviously, we heartily apologise for saying Humble Indie Bundle a few times more.
And it's reviewed in the very next issue.
And yeah, we've actually put a review of it in the magazine, which is probably where our confusion come from. So we will put that review online straight away as an apology for being so rubbish. Anyway, it is time for our closed ballot, which is basically an open ballot where we haven't had time to put the question online first. But it is this time. Do the likes of Red Hat, Novell, and Canonical contribute enough back to the community, or should they do more given the substantial resources at their disposal? So, gentlemen.
Who were the three companies?
Red Hat, Novell, and Canonical. Right. Do they contribute back enough given their resources, or should they do more?
I think Red Hat do. Does. I think they all do. Yeah. Red Hat does.
Employs loads of people.
Yeah, well, and they make tons of
They all employ loads of people.
Yeah. They employ loads of people who make code.
Right. Do they? All.
And the code is released.
Right.
That fellow with the beard, he works for Red Hat.
Alan Cox.
Yeah.
He's
Did
left,
he leave?
Yeah. Yeah, he's left.
Oh.
I'm rubbish.
You're brilliant. But remember that the survey of contributors to the kernel, was it Greg or someone did
Greg,
it a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
It was Fedora was way ahead, wasn't it? Red Hat was way ahead.
Yeah.
So I have to say Red Hat, great. Canonical, which I think Greg criticised in that very speech that he was talking about contributions, Canonical at the time, which is 2 or 3 years ago, made next to no contribution. In fact, I think even Mantriva had more than Canonical.
Yeah.
So,
but didn't we talk to Mark Shuttleworth about that last year?
Yeah,
we did. He said
something like, Linux doesn't need more kernel developers. It needs people writing documentation and making it look nice and easy to use.
There you go.
Which is absolutely totally fair point, yeah.
And he quoted a developer, a Samba developer, I think, saying how, it was Tridge, yeah, it was Andrew Tridgell, saying how Ubuntu saves him time. He is more productive thanks to Ubuntu. Ubuntu is so nice and working so well that actually that contributes a great deal of money back into the community by being more productive now. So I think Canonical contribute back a fair amount in terms of productivity, and Red Hat undoubtedly contribute a huge amount back in terms of contribution to the kernel and many other projects. What about Novell?
We've got Mono.
We've got Mono, yeah. Mono, and Mono's great, isn't it?
And Mono No-No, which is also great.
Oh no, it's spinning around in my head. It's an impossible dilemma. They're both awesome.
Well, I do think that, you know, the Linux community kind of damages itself by overanalyzing itself and maybe knocking... I mean, whoever's using Linux is great. Whoever's pushing it, making it more visible, even if they are forging ties with Microsoft, you know, it's all good. You know, they're not particularly competing against one another. You know, they all actually, when you look at those three, they're all after separate segments of the community, after separate PC segments. So, well, Red Hat, yeah. Okay, Red Hat Enterprise and Novell's Enterprise Service are very, very similar. But on the desktop space, they're quite different.
One of the things that has been the least awesome in the Linux world is the way Novell has competed directly against Red Hat. As in, you've gone to Novell.com and seen adverts like 10 reasons why you shouldn't buy Red Hat next and buy Novell, or that kind of thing. Very aggressive, direct competition with Red Hat, which, you know, we're fighting over a very small piece of the pie.
Yeah, that's a mistake. But also, isn't that something of an American attitude towards advertising? You know, go after your competitors like that.
I guess you could argue that Linux versus Linux, replacing A Linux with B Linux is actually quite easy. Whereas replacing a Microsoft solution with a Linux solution is going to require more work, more effort, more training and all this sort of thing. So I guess in terms of trying to find easy wins, they may find it easy to steal market share from Red Hat. But then at the same time, obviously Red Hat's market share is going through the roof. They're doing really well.
Yeah.
Regardless of the company.
Yeah, and Novell must want to grab hold of the coattails of Red Hat in terms of what they're doing on the enterprise.
That's possibly not how they see it.
No, they won't. They're a fantastic middleware provider.
Can anyone name three products that Novell makes, or maybe five products, make it slightly harder?
Netware.
Mono.
Yeah, so it's mostly in the middleware land, which is all very fluffy and ill-defined, and no one's quite sure what it does.
It's expensive, though, I imagine.
It's all about streamlining data silos, isn't it?
Yeah.
And leveraging other... such abstract nouns.
Yeah, I saw an awesome tweet recently, which was
that Java is a it's a very geeky tweet. I'm not even going to try and explain it. Java is a domain-specific language for turning XML into stack traces. Which is
right.
Which is obviously hilarious if you're a geek, a real geek, that is. I wish I'd been a programmer. No, you're all awesome, obviously. But that's what middleware is. It's lots of Java that kind of hooks bits of things to other bits of things and really doesn't do very much, but sells for a vast amount of money. So NetWare's a good example.
So, yes, that's not very good, Novell stealing Red Hat, because everybody should be making the Linux bubble grow larger. But in general, there must be a trend that they all help Linux grow.
Yeah.
And so that's got to just be a good thing.
I should think so, yeah. I mean, we talked already about Greg Kroah-Hartman. He does an obviously gigantic amount of work as an ambassador for Linux and also programming. He's
employed by Novell.
He is employed by Novell, yeah. And so, or Andreas Jaeger, another fantastic coder. They've put some great... You know, Miguel de Casas is still hired by Novell.
Yeah.
They hire some really, really top minds at Novell. Obviously, Miguel works on Mono, which not everyone thinks is as awesome as we do. But he still does it. He still contributes a lot to the community, which is great.
Yeah, yeah.
So what are you saying? They already contribute back enough and should be left alone?
Not necessarily left alone. I mean, the price of vigilance is eternal something or other, so we should keep monitoring them and jolly them along to keep up the good work, chaps. Keep it up.
Yeah, I think I agree. There's nothing wrong with... I mean, I don't know if it's negative, but I haven't agreed with quite a lot of Novell's strategy over the last 5 years. Is that negative? I mean...
You've agreed less with them.
I've agreed less with them. Yeah, I haven't understood their internal motivations for some of their decisions. You know, the patent indemnity and the voucher scheme with Microsoft. But that's their choice, you know, and I think the community is better as a whole if people have a wider choice in what they want. Because I don't know, they know their customers better than I do. If that's what they need, then there's nothing wrong with Novell doing it.
Well, it's curious because obviously the voucher thing caused a big fight at the time, but no one really cares too much anymore.
No, well, nothing has really happened despite the value of those vouchers. If you actually look at it,
yeah,
it's phenomenal yet.
Correct. It's basically a large chunk of cash to Novell. Hey, thanks. Yeah. So nothing's really been that offensive about it.
No.
Also, the patent infringement is still patent indemnity, sorry, is still a bit of a hot issue. But we can't really comment on that while being positive, can we? In 2 weeks, we'll report back on what we really think about patent indemnity with Microsoft.
The challenge for the next podcast is to be completely negative.
Well, no, because a video challenge was last 2 weeks, which we'll put up shortly. And this one is don't be negative. So we actually have a 2 week break without a challenge. We can just sit around in the sun and sun ourselves.
Awesome.
Or read some of those awesome books we bought from Powell's bookstore in Oscon. I love Powell's.
This is like a reinforcing circle of positivity.
It is.
We're happy because we were able to do a
In
challenge.
Fact, if you look out the window, you can see some dancing unicorns. Yeah.
I like the pink ones best. Naturally.
And with such sad, sad mic references, we come to the end of our podcast where there is a bit of silence.
No, we don't.
No, we don't.
No, we don't.
You're right.
There's more awesome to come.
There is more awesome. Okay, enough of the closed ballot. Let's go on to the hot seat, where we will spin the Wheel of Fortune, now made from papier-mâché. So we will just look at it and say, click, 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 click. In exactly that way. Let's try that again. Click, 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 click. Magic. Okay, so this week we have the inimitable Andrew Gregory up in line. And
hello.
On our papier-mâché thing, lots of very carefully styled topics, including Android, which is what I'm hoping for. Grub, the perennial favourite. GTK, didn't we have GTK already? Someone cross that off. Who put GTK on there?
Cross it off. I don't know. Who knew we didn't have GTK?
Well, anyways, put it off and put knitting on there. We're trying to appeal to a wide
knit
audience.
ML. Knit ML.
Knit ML, yes. Knit ML.
Good lord.
Yes. So we will just stare at the papier-mâché thing because we don't dare touch it. It's just too beautiful.
Please land on something easy.
I will voice spin it. Click, 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 click. Magic. Andrew, it looks like your topic is the GIMP.
Awesome. I used the GIMP only yesterday.
Wow.
What a standard coincidence.
Andrew, you have 1 minute to talk about the GIMP, obviously being as positive as you can because the GIMP is just awesome.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
I'm kind of ready. How do you spell image? Good lord. I used to use a pictogram. Image. Yes, I'm ready now.
Early, and time starts now.
GIMP is the most awesome name in the whole world of free software. It originally stood for General Image Manipulation Program, but then when it came under the aegis of the GNU project, it changed the acronym, so it's now GNU Image Manipulation Program. It's a raster graphics editor, which means that it's broadly similar to Photoshop. You use it to edit your photographs, take red eye off and all that stuff. Except that, whereas Photoshop costs £600, the GIMP is awesomely free. That's right. That's like, that's not just like £600 per user. So if you've got five people in a room, then that's, oh, I don't know, like what, £700 or something. If they were using GIMP, it cost nothing at all. It's really hard to use, in fairness. If you buy the Artist's Guide to GIMP Effects, that will make things really, really easy. That's available on all good Amazons near you. It's been ported to Mac OS X and Windows, so you can enjoy the awesome, even if you're not using the really awesome operating system.
Yes.
And 2 seconds more of filler.
There we go. Well done.
Pretty good.
It really is ace. Like, if you look at some of the tutorials and stuff that Michael J. Hamill's done on graphicsmuse.com, that's graphics-muse.com, and indeed in Linux format, if you look through your stack of online PDFs, which you can get if you're a subscriber, look through all the tutorials, he's done some like really, really like mind-blowing stuff. You just think, how? And that people do this for free. They've created this amazing thing and given it to us.
Yeah.
It's the only downside is that it's so hard to use, but then you wouldn't criticise an aeroplane for being hard to use. Of course it's hard to use. It does cool things.
We have a very large collection of GIMP tutorials on TuxRadar at tuxradar.com/GIMP.
Oh, so you don't even need to subscribe?
No. Wow. We're so friendly.
It's as if we're giving content away for free.
Yes, we're giving things away for free because we love supporting the community. And with that, we come to the end of our podcast. Don't forget, you can subscribe online, if you want to, at tuxradar.com/subscribe. And we will see you in 2 weeks, unless you come and grab us at OSCON. We'll be loitering around Powell's bookstore, because it's the best place in Portland. Come and grab us. We're the out-of-place-looking British people.
Knitting.
See you in 2 weeks. Bye.